with, perhaps on one night, something vanishing swiftly across a lawn before he could focus his eyes or speak. But now, tonight, he slowed almost to a stop. His inner mind, reaching out to turn the corner for him, had heard the faintest whisper. Breathing? Or was the atmosphere compressed merely by someone standing very quietly there, waiting? He turned the corner. The autumn leaves blew over the moonlit pavement in such a way as to make the girl who was moving there seem fixed to a sliding walk, letting the motion of the wind and the leaves carry her forward. Her head was half-bent to watch her shoes stir the circling leaves. Her face was slender and milk-white, and in it was a kind of gentle hunger that touched over everything with tireless curiosity. It was a look, almost, of pale surprise. The dark eyes were so fixed to the world that no move escaped them. Her dress was white, and it whispered. He almost thought he heard the motion of her hands as she walked, and the infinitely small sound now, the white stir of her face turning when she discovered she was a moment away from a man who stood in the middle of the pavement, waiting. The trees overhead made a great sound of letting down their dry rain. The girl stopped, and looked as if she might pull back in surprise, but instead stood regarding Montag with eyes so dark and shining and alive that he felt he had said something quite wonderful. But he knew his mouth had only moved to say hello, and then, when she seemed hypnotized by the salamander on his arm and the phoenix disc on his chest, he spoke again. "Of course," he said. "You're our new neighbor, aren't you?" "And you must be," she raised her eyes from his professional symbols, "the fireman." Her voice trailed off. "How oddly you say that." I'd have known it with my eyes shut," she said slowly. "What? The smell of kerosene? My wife always complains," he laughed. "You never wash it off completely." "No, you don't," she said in awe. He felt she was walking in a circle about him, turning him end for end, shaking him quietly, and emptying his pockets without once moving herself. "Kerosene," he said because the silence had lengthened, "is nothing but perfume to me."
"Does it seem like that, really?"
"Of course. Why not?" She gave herself time to think of it. "I don't know." She turned to face the sidewalk, going toward their homes. "Do you mind if I walk back with you? I'm Clarice McClellan." "Clarice, Guy Montag. Come along. What are you doing out so late wandering around? How old are you?" They walked in the warm, cool, blowing night on the silvered pavement, and there was the faintest breath of fresh apricots and strawberries in the air. And he looked around and realized this was quite impossible, so late in the year. There was only the girl walking with him now, her face bright as snow in the moonlight, and he knew she was working his questions around, seeking the best answers she could possibly give. "Well," she said, "I'm 17 and I'm crazy. My uncle says the two always go together. When people ask your age," he said, "always say 17 and insane. Isn't this a nice time of night to walk? I like to smell things and look at things. And sometimes stay up all night, walking, and watch the sunrise." They walked on again in silence, and finally she said, thoughtfully, "You know, I'm not afraid of you at all." He was surprised. "Why should you be?" "So many people are. Afraid of firemen, I mean. But you're just a man, after all." He saw himself in her eyes, suspended in two shining drops of bright water, himself dark and tiny in fine detail, the lines about his mouth, everything there, as if her eyes were two miraculous bits of violet amber that might capture and hold him intact. Her face, turned to him now, was fragile milk crystal with a soft and constant light in it. It was not the hysterical light of electricity, but what? But the strangely comfortable and rare and gently flattering light of the candle. One time, as a child in a power failure, his mother had found and lit a last candle, and there had been a brief hour of rediscovery, of such illumination that space lost its vast dimensions and drew comfortably around them, and they, mother and son, alone, transformed, hoping that the power might not come on again too soon. And then Clarice McClellan said, "Do you mind if I ask how long you've worked at being a fireman?" "Since I was 20, 10 years ago." "Do you ever read any of the books you burn?" He laughed. "That's against the law." "Oh, of course. It's fine work. Monday burn Millay, Wednesday Whitman, Friday Faulkner, burn them to ashes, then burn the ashes."